cartoons from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. Woo! What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to What a Cartoon, where imperfect pork chops give us hot dogs. I'm your host, a pet for your tummy, Bob Mackey, and this is an audio exploration of every cartoon ever. Who is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I get my powers from eating ice cream.
What a great power. Who else?
Just the bits, please. I'm Matthew J.
And today's episode is the Steven Universe episodes, Gem Glow / Laser Light Cannon.
Oh, sweet cookie cats, with your crunchy cookie outside, your icy creamy insides. You were too good for this world.
So just like my dream came true when I podcasted about King of the Hill, now Henry's dream is coming true.
Yes.
He finally gets the podcast about Steven Universe.
At long last, it has happened.
And by the way, I'm also a fan of what little I've seen, and I've seen very little, but I do really like it.
Yeah, so for Steven Universe fans listening, like I have watched every episode. I believe, Matthew, you are a devotee as well.
Yes, I don't think I've seen the most recent bomb.
Oh, goodness.
It's hard to keep up sometimes.
What? They do 5 episodes every 6 months at this current rate.
Yeah, and sometimes they're like on the app and they don't go to Hulu right away. It takes forever to do that. And
you're pretty behind on Hulu. They're way behind, actually. They're like 13 episodes or so.
We should tell people these episodes are on Hulu, the ones we're doing today.
These are the first 2 episodes of Steven Universe, so we didn't want to, like, especially since Bob had not seen Steven Universe before, if we had started with, say, 25th and 26th episodes, the Lapis Lazuli ones, those are great episodes, but you kind of need a lot of setup for that.
The lore gets a little thick.
And that's just where the lore begins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these first few episodes are pretty lore light, but they're still kind of lore heavy in terms of what they have to tell you while still making things interesting.
They're hinting at it, the lore to come. But it had been the first time in a while since I'd seen the first episodes, but they still really hold up. The hold up from 2013.
all the way back then.
But they do really still hold up, and they have a lot of promise of what's to come in Steven Universe.
Did the show ever end up looking different? Because it looks gorgeous, even in these early episodes.
They refine the look to, like, kind of smooth out some things and, like, cutify things more, too, I'd say. Steven definitely gets cuter.
Yeah, and they definitely... And also, part of that is he changes the entire way he does his performance. Zach Galligan. Yeah. Or not Zach Galligan. That's from Gremlins.
Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis.
But it's... There's a lot of conversation about on-model cartoons these days, and Steven Universe seems to be the eye of that storm, because depending on who's directing it, it can look very different, and some people aren't cool with that. I think that's great. I think it's awesome.
I fucking love that. That is a rule that co-executive producer on the show, Ian Jones Quarty, talked about in the Art of Steven Universe book, but also he talks about it with his current show that he created, OKKO. More so, there's the rule on OKKO. If you can recognize the character, it's on-model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the art book, they have the character design docs they sent overseas of just like, here's the craziest Steven can look sometimes. And that's not wrong if you see it. Like, so this is the extreme.
Yeah, don't fix it.
It actually reminded me of a show I have seen a lot of, and it is the exact opposite of Steven Universe. That's Flapjack. So in Steven Universe, everything is cute. In Flapjack, everything is ugly. But in both shows, especially with Steven, they're like, he can look like whatever he wants to convey any sort of emotion or feeling or whatever we want him to do. And he's like, he's very squishable and like stretchable.
I love how squishy and stretchy Steven is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in these first couple episodes, they really hew more toward Rebecca Sugar's kind of drawing style, I feel. Have you ever seen the pilot?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The pilot, which is non-canonical, and which is why I wasn't like, oh, let's watch that. Because even there, like, this was a test. We went back to the drawing board after it.
Mm-hmm. The pilot's kind of just like a battle, like an isolated battle, right?
Kind of.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
They get in a big fight.
There's a bit of story in there, too. Mm-hmm. You see them hanging out and you see them tell Steven, like, you can't come with us, but then he ends up helping out in his own way, and he writes the theme song in it, just like in the show, which he does as like a baby. We see him play the song with his little ukulele in his dad's van.
But definitely in the pilot, they are more like, they're even linear and more detailed in that kind of way.
And Pearl's very like very, her entire model is very thin. Like, mm-hmm. her head doesn't go out very far. Even her nose doesn't go out very far. She's very squished.
They all got more specified. Well, but so let's get into the history of it then. And it's funny you said Flapjack, Bob, because this show is kind of a grandson of Flapjack, I would say. Some folks who worked on Flapjack work on this, but not the creator, Rebecca Sugar. So Rebecca Sugar is a Maryland native who grew up with a love of art and cartooning from a young age. She also loved anime and video games and being creative and turned that into an animation career while attending the School of Visual Arts in New York, where she would do also a bunch of cool indie comics, including, for our Simpsons fans out there, Don't Cry For Me, I'm Already Dead. If you have read that, if you haven't read Don't Cry For Me, I'm Already Dead, get on that.
That's really great. Around for so long before this.
It's beautiful. I didn't know, I read it before I knew who Rebecca Sugar was from watching Steven Universe, but I didn't know they were the same person who did that. Mm-hmm. And as you may know from reading comics online, sometimes it's hard to see who it's attributed to. Yeah. So I didn't know the name of the artist.
It's very easy to crop out and share with friends.
It's more shareable that way.
I have to say, I actually know about her from a weird source, Something Awful. So I'm a Something Awful goon. I write for the front page. I'm also on the forums. And a while back, the resident cartoonist for Something Awful, who has since been outed as a creep, so I won't say their name, they had a series called Gaming Guys. And there are these very, very, very crudely drawn gamers. And the entire thing was sort of like an Adult Swim style cartoon making fun of gamers and gaming culture. But there was a fan art contest, like draw these two characters and whatever cool style you want. And I believe she won. Whoa. She won the contest, and her entry was amazing, but it was totally her style. So she drew those horribly crude characters in the Rebecca Sugar beautiful flowing line style.
Yeah, it's very like wavy and wiggly, and has very thick lines that kind of dance throughout the, like, the line width just changes beautifully throughout all of her drawings. She always, have you seen her student film?
A long time ago.
Chest, like the guy walking into his own chest and his little apartments
It's amazing.
It's really cool
work of like perspective. It's wild, that cartoon. And so when she was working on those things as a student in New York, that's where she connected with several people who would end up working on the show, including Ian Jones-Cordy, Cap Morris, and Lamar Abrams. And it was also during that time that she couldn't decide if she wanted to be an animator or an indie comic artist. And she was giving it a shot in indie comics art, but also applied to work on the storyboard team at Adventure Time. And she ended up getting hired there and flew out to LA and started working on the show, and very quickly got promoted to a storyboard artist and soon was writing songs for the show. Like, she was a major contributor to Adventure Time in its formative years, and when it became more than just like a gag cartoon.
The Fry Song?
Yeah. That was her first one. She also, I think her most famous ones are like Bacon Pancakes. She wrote that.
Oh, okay.
And also the very like touching and painful Remember Me song in it. Not to be confused with the one in Coco, but which is also sad.
Pending lawsuit.
But she really understood the character of, like, I'd say Marceline was one of her best characters she wrote in that. She also, if you've seen the Fiona and Cake episode, she was pretty key in those as well. Mm-hmm. She was a big deal on that. And then it came a time in 2011 where Cartoon Network was looking for pitches for new shows. And they got a bunch of pitches, including she had pitched Steven Universe to them, inspired by her little brother, Steven Sugar, who also is an artist, was an artist working with her on Adventure Time, and then went on to work with her on the Steven Universe pilot. And it was basically about her relationship with her little brother. I see it as, like, all three of the gems are kind of different versions of Rebecca taking care of their little brother, but also learning from Steven at the same time. The pilot went, it started gaining steam. She left Adventure Time officially in 2012, so she would come back to voice Marceline's mom in the Marceline Stakes miniseries. Then she just was working full-time on creating Steven Universe and becoming the first woman to create a show for Cartoon Network, which honestly, that's a long time.
I'm just thinking, like, so the pilot caught a lot of steam and then it was picked up pretty quickly. I remember the Adventure Time pilot probably came out in 2005, and it would be another 5 years or so before it became a proper show.
Yeah, just like float around the internet. Actually, David Bednar, if you're listening, you showed it to me in a hotel room once.
Wow. I remember seeing it on YouTube when in like 2005, the Adventure Time one, and just thinking, like, well, this is great, but it'll never be a show. Like, this is for stoners. This is a goofy stoner show. And lo and behold, like, Adventure Time became basically the minor leagues for a Cartoon Network. Like, so many creators came out of that. Mm-hmm. And now there's multiple people getting new shows on Cartoon Network that came out of Steven Universe, who had left Steven Universe. Not just Ian Jones Quartey's OKKO, but also this new series, Craig of the Creek, is several ex-Steven Universe people who created mm-hmm. it as well.
That show looks fantastic. I can't wait to watch that. But that's,
and I like all, the pilot a lot.
Yeah, and this all goes back to Flapjack, because that family tree, like, mm-hmm. kind of does start there, where, like, that's how, because she got her job from Adventure Time, from Penn, who worked on there, and then also two new shows, like you said, just came out of Gravity Falls, which that started there, too, with Alex Hirsch.
Oh, yeah.
He worked on there, and the regular show guy, J.G. Quintel.
Quintel, yeah.
Yeah, he has a new show now, too, but he made regular show out of working at Flapjack.
Yeah, and also, another person who worked on Steven Universe when they got its start is a full-time series. In the core group was definitely Cap Morris with Rebecca Sugar, Ian Jones Quartey, and Steven Sugar, and also one of their early producers of the show who was kind of like making sure everything was running correctly, Jackie Buscarino.
Yay.
I love Jackie.
I've heard hours and hours of her voice. her angry voice.
Her yelling at Justin Roiland and telling him to clean his apartment.
Yes. Just going like, ew. Just all of her many ews.
Or threatening to leave.
Yes. Yeah.
She's in a better place now. It's fine.
And Steven Universe is an amazing show that is both like a action anime takeoff, kind of Simpson-y, but also a musical. And mm-hmm. a big part of that, too, is in the voices that Rebecca Sugar cast people with a musical background. Zach Callison, Estelle, Dee Dee Magnohall all had musical backgrounds.
Dee Dee Magnohall, who is like regularly on Broadway, and she's been in like big things, and also her band is very popular.
Her and two other actresses from later in the show, they do like regular concerts in LA of just like, it's the Steven Universe singers,
wow.
and they just
mm-hmm.
do like musical standards.
Can you name where we might have heard these people before, or what roles they played before?
Well, Zach Callison was a child actor who got cast.
He's very young.
Yeah, well, now he's a sexy 21-year-old.
Do they pitch his voice up, or does he have like a naturally higher voice?
He kind of like he pushes it up. Like, he starts like talking like this, I'm Steven, I, you know, Cookie Cat. And then mm-hmm. later on, he like really does it up here. Like, he talks from the top of his voice.
Interesting.
He talked about how he had to, once he went through the change, he had to relearn how to do the Steven voice.
Which is funny that he just goes the opposite direction. Like, the voices are not similar at all.
It's true. He has a much deeper register in this episode than he does in episode 100.
And it kind of gives him more of a, like, I guess I want to say dumber. Like, because later on, Steven, I think he does get much smarter. Earlier on, he is kind of more naive and silly. And it kind of does come out of that. Like, hey, oh, we should go fight this guy. I want to go. Why can't I go?
I think that, too, is just his emotional intelligence raises as the show goes.
As horrible things keep happening to him.
And Estelle is a big time, like, pop R&B star. She just is. Honestly, I hadn't heard of her before the show, but that's because I'm very out of touch with music. So
me too.
She is popular, but not in anywhere that any of us who we just listen to They Might Be Giants again and again.
Yeah.
So we're not going to hear her.
Did she work with Weezer? No?
Well, those are the two only bands you need, so no thanks.
Which Weedus album did she appear on?
But she also cast people who were not singers, but who... my favorite one is Tom Sharpling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I thought so.
That's kind of what brought me to the show, because Tom Sharpling, I love The Best Show. Rebecca Sugar was a avid Best Show listener. The story is that she, while pitching the show, but years before it was actually going to start, she asked Tom Sharpling, hey, would you ever want to be a voice on my show? And he's like, yeah, whatever, fine. If you do, that's never going to happen.
That sounds like a Tom Sharpling style response.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, it happened. And they cast him on the show as Greg Universe, the dad, and he records, I just saw this at New York Comic Con, I went to the Steven Universe panel, and they joked, it was Tom on stage with Zach, Dee Dee, and the voice of Amethyst, Michaela Dietz, and they're all joking about, like, we've never been in the same room with Tom before, he always records in New Jersey, and we're all in L.A.
I think you've been berated by Tom Sharpling several times, Henry.
Multiple times, yes, yeah, and it's a joy every time. Also, I feel personally subtweeted by his new show. He has a new show which is a joke on basically Talking Simpsons, but a lot of other shows like it.
Oh, you're right.
Meet My Friends, The Friends with Tom Sharpling. going, where he's going through every episode of Friends. And it is both a parody of those shows, but also one of those shows. And he's done 30 episodes now. It was not a quick joke. If you guys enjoy this, but would like somebody making fun of it. Then,
and you.
Yes, and me. And also, Rebecca Sugar cast interesting voices, too. Like, Joel Hodgson is a semi-regular on the show. It's Bear Dewey. Sinbad's in the first season, then kind of disappears.
Hmm. It's a shame. He gets recast, too. That character still exists. And it was a very funny character. And Sinbad's he's not, good on it, but it's great that he's still really trying and voice acting.
It's fun that it's Sinbad.
Yeah.
And the show is very musical, especially Rebecca Sugar writes so much of the music for the show. Mm. Pretty much, I think, all of it. You can hear, demo she's very good at releasing the demo versions of the songs for it. But she's also joined by Avian Surashu and also Jeff Louie on the music that kind of mixes together, chip tunes with rock opera and then just straight musicals.
Yeah, they're, chip tuny. The background music is usually, this is just, a Final Fantasy town. Mm-hmm. But in a beach city kind of way.
Yeah, I love, and it gets video gamier in other points, and also when Steven actually just plays video games for episodes.
Yeah, the GameCube.
And there's also a hilarious thing in something that I loved reading for sure, but I would have guessed anyway, is this is a show made by people of our generation who grew up with both funny American cartoons, but also a ton of anime. So the anime influence in this show is strong. They specifically, Rebecca Sugar shouts out to Future Boy Conan, Revolutionary Girl, Utena, and Simpsons. Mm. Those were all heavy influences on the show.
Utena, for sure. If you look at that stuff, there's direct, they just take
Pearl
scenes
is basically
from
an Utena character. Yeah. Another thing I love about the show is that it's unapologetically earnest, and it's about feelings and love and crying, and the one character on the show who gets to be a cynical dick, Lars, is always judged for that, and eventually he even softens to a marshmallow. The show rewards niceness and empathy, and it's also an incredibly queer show, which I love about it. You don't get a ton of that in this, but
everyone's a lesbian in the show.
Pretty much.
90% of the characters.
Yeah. I'm surprised there were no Fox News outrage over Steven Universe.
Right?
Yeah, I think they have to look harder to find it.
Turn the freaking rocks gay!
It's they'd have to find subtext. I'm not smart enough for that, so I think it's not going to work.
I don't think it's popular. I don't think most people outside of animation nerds and anime nerds and internet Twitter people really know this show very much. I get compliments when I wear my Steven Universe shirt, but I can tell they're one of me when they do
right,
that.
Right, right.
Steven Universe is one of their most highest rated shows on Cartoon Network, but I wonder how much it goes outside of that bubble, definitely. Mm-hmm. And lots of later episodes deal with subject matter I can't believe was in a cartoon show, like consent, mindfulness, and a critique of colonialism, racism, all this shit is in there, and they just deal with it. The consent stuff, especially with episodes featuring the characters of Stevani and Kevin, of just wow, this is really, I was shocked, but they dealt with that in a cartoon, though. Rebecca Sugar has gone on record as saying, this is stuff kids need to know about, and they got to deal with it in a certain way. And also gender stuff, too. Stevani is a non-binary gender character. Smokey Quartz is non-binary. And there's, gender gets played around with so much in the show in such interesting ways that when I first saw it, I was I can't believe a kid's show is doing this. And Rebecca Sugar, I think, and the rest of the team on Steven Universe, the Crooniverse, as they call themselves, they really pushed the envelope on this stuff and opened up. There's tons more. There has been a queerening of children's cartoons in America thanks to Steven Universe, I think, giving them permission and pushing the border a little farther on that stuff.
Loud House, which we're allowed to watch again, has a very prominent character it's very obviously coded in that way, and I feel like more obvious than some stuff on Steven Universe. See them passing letters to each other and stuff.
I think you're forgetting pioneers like Ren and Stimpy, and they slept in the same bed. I don't mean to discount that. It's very important.
No, Yogi Bear was doing it first too, but Snagglepuss was really ahead of his time. But anyway,
Tennessee Williams now. But Bob, do you know all those characters he just said? Are you aware of the fusion stuff?
Through Henry, I am.
Okay,
just via Henry's through Henry osmosis, I know a lot of Steven Universe stuff.
I want to throw that out real quick too. Is that the fusion fusions are just representations of your relationships personally, mm-hmm. including like romantic relationships, including platonic relationships.
Yeah, it's not just a sexual relationship. Yeah. It can be, but it's not just that.
Mm-hmm. And it's about balance between any relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think that's funny watching the first season again, where like there's that episode where all three of the main gems fuse into pretending to be Steven's mom.
Yeah, for a sitcom style, like, well, we have to pretend to be your mom together thing.
Yeah.
Instead of, they don't save the triple fusion for a giant Evangelion style fight, which will happen later. Instead, they first do it for a sitcom-y, like, well, we got to pretend to be his mom.
And it seems like so much less heavy than it is later. Later on, fusion is such a huge deal and one of the most important themes in the show. And back then, it's like, oh, yeah, we can just fuse. And they're wobbling around. And my favorite line ever is when they show up and Greg is just, who's they're pretending to be Greg's wife, and he's just like nonplussed. He's just like, oh, this massive drink of water is my wife. When he says that, it's so funny.
And too, like, it's such a diverse cast and crew on it too. Like, Rebecca Sugar worked really hard on that. Another of my favorite episodes is the Thanksgiving special they did, which really is about like, well, what if your racist uncle's a dick at Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Who did this to my freaking barn? Yeah. That guy.
You guys are hippies. Illegal alien hippies. And he's voiced.
It's Carl.
It's Carl. It's the Carl voice.
Oh,
it's
no way. Yeah. Is that Dave Willis?
It's Dave Willis doing the Carl voice.
I love the Carl voice.
The exact same voice.
I think we've sold Bob on watching
I work
this.
Out of the home.
It's a fry man. Fuse with me.
So yeah, it's a
oh,
beautiful.
Oh wait, Frylock has a gem.
That's my God, Frylock has a crystal gem.
Sorry, I just ruined this entire podcast.
Well, let's just talk about Aqua Teen now. So yes,
totally do one of those.
Steven Universe is just such an amazing show. I could do a Talking Simpsons about Steven Universe if I will. But though I will say, if you love podcasts in Steven Universe, but you haven't listened to the official Cartoon Network one, it's a lot of fun. Now look, they're not going to say the F word. There's actually a cute moment in one episode where Rebecca Sugar asks if she can say screwed. Saying like, this character got screwed over.
And it's got everyone on it. Like, every voice actor, Rebecca Sugar, Steven, all the people.
All the writers, it's really great. And including you get to hear the actors improvise in character occasionally too. Because they're like, and we're interviewing Steven and Connie this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to lay it on too thick, but this is my favorite cartoon maybe ever. It feels, I have never felt like a show was made exactly for me before, but that is how this show feels. It feels like, it's super gay. It's all about musicals, but it's also about cool anime action scenes. It's full of great songs. Whenever they cast a guest voice, I'm like, holy fuck, that is exactly the person. They do multiple wrestling episodes that understand what wrestling is about and why people love pro wrestling.
This show is also very high up there for me. I show it to everyone. I'd say 3 out of 5 episodes make me cry. I regularly cry, even watching one I've watched 10 times. This is one. So when my girlfriend doesn't like a show, I'm like, whatever, fine. It's a dumb show that I like. You don't have to like it. This is the one where I'm like, okay, this episode will turn. Like, I just keep showing her episodes.
We're going to have to break up soon if you don't like it.
And I was co-director of a music school for a year, and I gave every teacher, I was like, here are the links to all the songs of Steven Universe. If you want to use it in your curriculum, you should. And like, some of them did. Some of them, the one that Pearl sings about how she misses Steven's mom when they're in the city, when they're in New York.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's over, isn't it?
Yes, that song. Like, that song, one of them did like use that with a student, and I was like, because that's my favorite song in the show. So I really pushed
it. I love
that
song so much.
Pearl's the best. Pearl and Greg are the two best characters on television. In the world, they're fantastic. Also, to mention, the show is set in New Jersey.
Yes, it is a New Jersey show.
I think that's awesome. Even though it's North Jersey, it's not my Jersey. It's still exciting to see a cartoon not say that it's like no, we have nice beaches. Like, it's this is where everyone comes to go to the beach.
Beach City is vague enough at the start, but then when they go to Empire City, which is Manhattan, they make it pretty clear. It's
they like, talk about going over the bridge, then through the tunnel. Yeah,
and Tom Sharpling is a New Jersey native, so he really lends a Jersey vibe to it, which I think is also why it's good that basically Carl is in it too, because Carl is a very Jersey guy as well.
Wait, Aqua Teen does take place in New Jersey, right?
It does, and then later on it's like New Jersey, Washington or something. Like, later on they change it for no reason, but it's still called New Jersey, but New Jersey's a city in like Wyoming or something. Like, I was reading this recently because I went on Adult Swim binge, and it's, you know, when they go crazy in the last two seasons where it's like Aqua Unit Patrol Squad 1.
Oh yeah, it's even more nihilistic.
Yeah, Teen Aqua Show and all that stuff. They just start start changing all the canon to see if you're following it.
I love that.
Tom Sharpling played Willie Nelson on Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Like, I just love his line of like, oh, this isn't mine. I'll just throw it away.
Yeah. You guys want some juice?
Yeah. Oh, God. Willie Nelson, the last guy you see in Aqua Teen Hunger Force in the last episode.
Oh, it's, man.
We keep talking about Aqua Teen.
I'm sorry.
But seriously, I love Steven Universe so much. I've been watching since basically day one when the ads were coming out. I didn't see the pilot, and I was not aware of. I wasn't an Adventure Time viewer, so I didn't know about it. There were Adventure Time fans who, a year ahead before the show started, they were already excited for it because, like, Rebecca Sugar's getting her own show. Oh my God.
She was already getting a lot of traction online based on her work on that show. Especially, I remember Fiona and Cake being like a huge deal.
Oh, yeah.
And people really attaching her name to that.
I mean, Fiona and Cake, of course, fans are going to love that. It's a fan fiction episode.
Yeah.
It's about living fan fiction.
What if Finn was a thick lady? Hey, why, internet, hey, guess what?
I've seen a lot of cosplay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
These are the first two episodes. They premiered back-to-back November 4th, 2013. So almost 5 years ago.
Can you believe it.
Steven Universe has been around that long?
Time is speeding by. Sorry.
It's not on Blu-ray, right?
No, you can get DVDs of it. I just want to have it on a shelf, but when I saw it was just a DVD, I'm like, you made this in HD. Come
and it's
on.
Like five episodes per DVD usually.
Well, they finally did a real season one box set.
Did they?
At least a cool box where when you lift up the sleeve, it's Steven's face on the front, and when you lift up the sleeve, it is his stomach. So it's like he's lifting up his shirt to reveal his gem.
So much merch is based around that. Yes. Like the first first plush that came out of him, the whole point of it is you can lift his shirt up and see his gem.
Steven's not ashamed. He does not have body shame on that.
I have a very boring question, though. When I was watching on Hulu, this could just be a Hulu thing, but I noticed it was only 720p, which meant I could see like little jaggies and stuff. Did they eventually increase the resolution of the show, or is that just a Hulu, stream at this resolution issue?
All I know is when I have bought seasons on iTunes, but the later seasons, I'm 99% sure those are 1080p.
Okay.
But
I think that's Cartoon Network making crappy deals with streaming services, which they tend to.
Like, you get the inferior version, you get the lesser version.
Or, like, they just never updated it.
Yeah.
That's been on there for, like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's true.
That's how I first watched it, was I discovered it on Hulu. And so probably, like, a year after it came out. And that back then, we weren't streaming things in 1080p yet, so who knows? I mean, some people were. I wasn't on my crappy Comcast.
I have a 4K TV. Now everything lets me down. Everything is ugly now.
So these two episodes are really meant to be seen back-to-back. It's good because these are the core cast of the show here that they start with. And I think it's really interesting they start with Sadie, Lars, and Steven because Sadie and Lars, in Rebecca Sugar's history, they're the first two characters. Two of the first characters she ever created, like in indie comics. Like, she in the art book, it talks about how Sadie and Lars have existed in her comics for a long time before Steven Universe.
And I didn't know that. I have that book and I have barely read it. I really got to get into it.
She even talked about how she at first wondered about pitching a different show than one so personal to her, but she knew, like, she wanted to go with what her passion was, even if it meant, like, technically selling her brother to a giant corporation. Like, she that's what Cartoon Network is. And she also made. Steven Sugar in the book mentions that Rebecca went to him a million times saying, like, are you sure you're okay with us calling the show Steven? Are you sure? Are you sure it's okay? We'll change
that
was
it. Nice.
Yeah. Imagine how weird that must be.
This opening scene reminded me a lot of actually OKKO, which should not be surprising because Ian Jones-Quartey, like, was supervising director during the season, but they both take place like in a convenience store in a very colorful setting with cute characters.
Yeah, but so specifically a donut shop. It's like mostly a donut shop, but a donut shop, the Big Donut sells a lot of stuff, and this is such a cute opening, and the first words you hear from Steven is a big no.
No! This can't be happening! This has to be a dream! Lars! Lars! Please tell me I'm dreaming!
Get off me, man! I'm stuck in here!
I'm sorry, Steven. I guess they stopped making them.
Stop making them? Why in the world would they stop making Cookie Cats? They're only the most scrumptious and delicious ice cream sandwich ever made! Don't they have laws for this?
Tough bits, man. Nobody buys them anymore. I guess they couldn't compete with Lion Liquors.
Ugh, not Lion Liquors. Nobody likes them. They don't even look like lions. Kids these days, I'll tell you what.
Well, if you miss your wimpy ice cream so much, why don't you make some with your magic belly button?
That's not how it works, Lars. Right?
I do like the Lion Liquors, the very observational quality of the eyeballs like drifting apart. they're like Funko Pops or something.
There's no uniform design to them. They look like that Sonic ice cream bar that you've seen on the internets out there.
Mm-hmm. Or like any sort of mutated ice cream bar you get from an ice cream man. Like they all have drifting eyes.
And there's Lars talking about a lion. Possible foreshadowing.
Oh, wow. Sorry,
I doubt it. But
I have a lot of burning questions. Like, where does he find more cookie cats?
Well, the gems have a way of teleporting around, so they could go anywhere in America and buy the remaining cookie cats of stuff.
Interesting.
They didn't just go around Beach City, I think. They can teleport lots of places.
The merch I always want from Steven Universe is that fridge. I want the cookie
cat
fridge.
The cookie cat fridge is quite beautiful.
Oh, I say go on Etsy. There's got to be thousands of them.
Probably, yeah.
A lot of the early Steven Universe merchandise was cookie cat. There was a ton of cookie cat merchandise.
There's I remember at Hot Topic had a keychain and stuff, and they one of the first comic cons they went to, they had a cookie cat like ice cream truck that was giving out real cookie cats.
Actually, that was the company Bob and I used to work for.
They
ripped it up. Well, they didn't rip it off, but their project was to have a food truck, and then they would give away food based on stuff from multiple cartoons, including they did the Zootopia Paw Pops, they did Cookie Cat, they did the fun dip that Mabel gets high on in Gravity Falls.
I thought it was a website's job to make content for a website, but
no, it's food trucks.
Oh, okay, it's food trucks. That's what they do now.
Yeah. Food trucks to promote things that aren't you.
That's the important part.
Need to be free merch for other companies.
At some point, there's profit in there. You make a profit. Yeah. I don't know when.
This will remind you of something that we don't own. Enjoy.
But I mean, there's pictures like Rebecca Sugar got to enjoy that cookie cat she came by, and Alex Hirsch. There's a picture of her and Alex Hirsch enjoying the food of their creations at
that's horrible.
Which, I mean, and I tried to. I told Rebecca Sugar about it. They did, when we worked there at New York Comic Con. Actually, this was before Bob started, but when I was at New York Comic Con and interviewed Rebecca Sugar, I got to tell her like, "Hey, they're doing the together breakfast as a thing at the food truck now. If you want it, I can get you. I'll let the people know you're coming over." But I don't believe she took them up on that.
Alex Hirsch, who also made a fan favorite character out of his sibling and himself, the two brother and sister
Mabel
twins.
Is the greatest. I love Mabel so much.
Who are these weirdos that get along with their brothers and sisters? I don't understand it.
They mostly get along. The twins do.
Yeah.
I remember missing when ice cream went out of print as a kid. My favorite ice creams as a kid in the Cookie Cat mold were the Mickey Mouse head, but the ears were Eskimo pies. And so it was like chocolate coating ears, and then the face was uncoated ice cream.
Mm. You can still get the regular Mickey Mouse ice cream sandwich and ice cream bar at the parks.
Okay.
Yeah. Not what you just said.
I really miss the Flintstones push-up pops because normal push-up pops are just orange. Flintstones had all the flavors, and you could turn those tubes and sticks into a sticky car after you were done. Very sticky, bad car.
The best part about them going out of print, though, is that your cheap-ass, local ice cream truck company would just, they're not going to print a whole new side of the truck. They would just put a big, out sign right over, SpongeBob's face.
Extinct.
It will never be back. One of my favorite I love how many little fun drawings there are of Steven in every episode, especially him, just his sad nod that he wants to take the thing with him. There's not even a sound. He just is. And they just let him keep the freezer. That's crazy. After the first viewing, you can catch that Steven is humming the Cookie Cat song as he's walking home. You won't hear it until he gets there. And then we get to meet the Crystal Gems.
These things.
Oh, sorry, Steven. We'll get these centipedes out of your room. We think they were trying to get into the temple.
Yeah? You don't have to get rid of them. They're really cool.
You guys? These things don't have gems.
That means there must be a mother somewhere nearby.
We should probably find it before anyone gets hurt.
Ooh, can I come? Can I?
Steven, until you learn to control the powers in your gem, we'll take care of protecting humanity. Okay?
Oh, man.
I just love the matter-of-fact way Pearl just snaps its neck. Like that's a shocker in a kid's cartoon, too.
These are definitely taken right from the Wind Waker. They're called called Magtails. I looked it up. These are the exact same designs. Obviously, there was some inspiration there. And then when they're killed, they disappear in a puff of smoke, just like in Wind Waker.
You gotta wait until they open up and shoot them in the eye.
Yeah,
your arrow or your grappling hook.
Or in this show, just snap them in half.
So that's a gem creating other creatures without gems. Mm. I mean, maybe because it's a cracked gem, as we learn later.
Yeah, cracked
gems.
But
what the fuck?
You know, that does kind of break some rules there.
Yeah.
But there's a couple times. Well, same with the in the second episode, the red eye. I'm like, what is this in relation to the world of like the larger world we know of the home world and who's attacking them?
There's a bit of that in the first season, like the fusion thing we mentioned earlier. And there are some little drops, but they really do drop a real heavy one in the second episode that we'll talk about when we get to it.
But yeah, the centipedals are fun enemies for the first episode. And both these episodes, a lot of the show makes you think in the beginning it is a monster of the week show, which it really is for like 18 or so episodes. And then it gets much deeper after that. But the monster of the week are fun, and they're even more fun when they're recontextualized. Like Centipedal's Return episode is a really great one.
That's also a very anime thing. Like we'll be talking about, for reasons unknown to some of the listeners at this point, maybe we're talking about Evangelion together. And that's another trick that show pulls as well, and a lot of anime do, where even Cowboy Bebop starts out very episodic, and then like 10 or so episodes in really starts pulling everything together and pulling those wires together.
And Rebecca Sugar has been very clear of like being an Evangelion fan as well, and taking inspiration from that for the show. And you also get a cool just look at you get to know the gems really quickly here. You see that Garnet is cool and calm and under control, and
she's Grace Jones, right?
She is a bit, yeah, except thicker.
Rich man's Wesley Snipes.
Yes.
And then you've got Amethyst, who's just like very chill and down to earth and picking her nose without a care in the world. And then you have the very type A Pearl, who is just like, oh, Steven. You, like, she is a very serious mom, which is really good. Like Dee Dee, she's a mother as well. And so I think she's like channeling a lot of that through it. And I've read them saying about the show too, that Michaela Dietz just is Amethyst. Like, you're just Amethyst.
You know, oh, yeah. No, if you follow her Twitter, you see that a lot.
She's such a goofball. She is a voice in one of the GTA games, and when I interviewed her, she joked about how she had seen a video of somebody taking her lines from a GTA game and putting it in the mouth of Amethyst. She's like, Amethyst doesn't know those words. She shouldn't say that.
Have you seen that series of people taking Dee Dee Magno Hall rapping and having Pearl do her raps, and it's all the characters discovering that Pearl has a secret rap career?
It
keeps going. This person's making these videos where they're just editing footage from Steven Universe until eventually it pulls out to it's Dee Dee backstage at the show she's on, and the other people around her are seeing her being embarrassed by this, so they're learning that she has a secret rap career. And then including like Zach Callison and these other, it's amazing. Look it up.
I haven't seen that.
It's on YouTube. I don't know what they're called, but it's like Pearl's secret rap career or something.
So there's a lot of hiding things in plain sight in these early episodes, including the you see Connie's bracelet in the freezer right from the start when he grabs the cookie cat out of the freezer, and he won't give that to her for a few more episodes when Connie first appears, and it's a real cute moment. And but it's definitely there in the forefront for you to be like, is this something? What's the deal with this thing here? Like that the bracelet. But so then we get the classic cookie cat song.
Where did you get these? I thought they stopped making them.
Well, we heard that too, and since they're your favorite,
we went out and stole a bunch.
I went back and paid for them.
The whole thing was my idea.
It was everyone's idea.
Not really.
All that matters is that Steven is happy.
He's a frozen treat with an all-new taste, 'cause he came to this planet from outer space, a refugee of an interstellar war. But now he's at your local grocery store. Cookie Cat! He's a pet for your tummy. Cookie Cat! He's super-duper yummy. Cookie Cat! He left his family behind. Cookie Cat! Now available the Gurmans off Route 109.
I kept in that laugh because it's just so cute that they're amused by it. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. Steven.
It is a very kid thing to remember that extra like tag at the end. Yeah. That's not part of the song.
Yeah. That's such a specific reference there to just the rapping commercials of the 90s. Like for, say, Fruity Pebbles or McNuggets or all those things. Though, the Cookie Cat, too, is a reference to a degree of Cookie Puss, the Carvel ice cream cake.
How did I not put that together?
It's a very Northeast thing.
I didn't until we talked about Cookie Puss in Talking Critic. Marty learns to play guitar. That's the Cookie Puss one.
Except Cookie Cat is beautiful and cute, and Cookie Puss is some fucking mutant. I would never eat Cookie Puss.
Not as cool as Fudgy the Whale.
Oh, no.
Or Cookie Opus.
But in both of those cases, Cookie Puss and Cookie Cat come from outer space. And Cookie Puss didn't leave his family behind. That sad part isn't.
He was ousted by his family for being a monster.
That line is so funny. He left his family behind. The way he sells sad. It is so good.
Left his family behind. It's beautiful.
There's a lot we don't know about Cookie Cat. Yes.
And and I also think of Carvel when he says, like, of Mervyn's Route 109. That sounds like the Carvel, except Tom Carvel is talking about Cookie Puss.
I'll tell all of our listeners, go out and find the Patton Oswalt bit about the Carvel ice cream cakes.
Yeah. Cookie Puss, you get it. Cookie Puss. I'm just imitating the whole thing. And right after that, as Steven is eating it and talking about it, these just very kiddie things of like, I like to eat the ears first, and then he gets the glow.
So good! I like to eat the ears first.
Steven?
What? My gem!
Quick! Try and summon your weapon!
I don't know how! Ah! It's fading! How do I make it come back?
Calm down, Steven. Breathe. Don't force it.
Yeah. And try not to poop yourself either.
Please don't.
Oh! I was really close that time!
You get to see a lot of the character model flexibility there in Steven of like it's stomping up and down, especially the zoom ins on his stressed face, like, because he still has ice cream in his mouth too as he's doing it. So it's just a beautiful look. I love that stressed out Steven face.
I want to correct myself. I did just call Carvel Northeast. Should have said Southeast. It's from Georgia.
Oh, wow. I always thought of it as the Northeast as well.
Yeah, me too. I guess because I'm from more of that direction, but you're from the South. So.
Yeah.
So, this could be a spoiler, but does he always need specifically Cookie Cat ice cream to generate his shield, or is that a coincidence? Because it seems like it's a coincidence.
It is a coincidence. Yeah. Really, it's that I took this to mean, this is slight spoilers, but I took this to mean that it was Steven starting to feel just comfortable and love and affection, and it opened him up in that way.
Yeah.
It'll be a very major moment in the show, and he summons it just at will, which he still can't really do, but it's more of a reflex at this time, but it has nothing to do with ice cream. It's the ice cream just made him feel good, I think.
Yeah.
Steven, and relaxed.
He's a support character, so his powers are manifested by empathy and by helping other people, and all of his powers are defensive. He can heal people with his bodily fluids, and he also has a shield, just you know, like a Captain America shield. He doesn't have any sword or whip or anything like the other characters,
and a full bubble he can put over people that's his shield as well.
Yeah, it's all defensive stuff, and it usually comes out of him saving someone. There's an episode pretty soon where when he first meets Connie, where he accidentally saves her and they get stuck in the bubble.
He can't
for like
turn
a whole
the bubble
day.
Off. Yeah. Yeah, these early episodes are all about him learning his powers, which though it's not the entire series is not about learning his powers. Eventually, he learns all about how his powers, and then he gets to learn sad facts that adults have to deal with. Like that, the show is, Rebecca Sugar has been very clear, the show is about growing up, and you start with Steven in a real innocent point here, and many episodes are about like, oh, this thing you assumed about a person in your life, that was a lie, or you don't know. Like these gems have raised you, but you don't really know them.
We were talking a little while ago, the more we learn about his mom, like the darker that gets. Like his mom starts as a character that everybody loves and everybody misses, but you start to learn some stuff about her that's like, you put the pieces together and you're like, his mom is probably not a great person.
You think Rose is perfect because she's perfect in their memories in the show.
Pearl's in love with her and Greg's in love with her.
Yeah, and everybody else really respects her. And so... Yeah. you love her through that. But I do love the design on his shield, though. Actually, it hasn't appeared yet but I do love it. It's the rose thorns around it, and
it's definitely Utena.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Anything with like flowery stuff in it is pulling from that. And we also learned that
Pearl in general is a Utena character.
The merchandise, particularly the Funko merchandise, which has the directors and storyboard, one of the storyboard artists of the show helped design. You learn that his hair has that design.
I got to give a compliment to Funko. The Steven Funko. I was shocked to see that the first time I saw the back of his head. It's like, oh, his head is a rose. Mm-hmm. Like that's how his hair, puffy hair, goes together.
There's great design documents from one of the directors sending notes back on their design specs, and that's one of them. She draws it on there and says, like, this is how his hair should be. It's on their Tumblr, so the Crooniverse Tumblr, which you can just fall down for days.
Crooniverse is great. They're in general, all of them have amazing Tumblrs.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a nice way of introducing all three of the gems in kind of a solo scene to get a feel of what they're about. And so first, we get to hear Pearl in her view on summoning weapons.
Pay attention to these petals, Steven. The petals' dance seems improvised, but it is being calculated in real time based on the physical properties of this planet. With hard work and dedication, you can master the magical properties of your gem and perform your own dance. Like so.
But meanwhile, Garnet and Amethyst have different feelings on summoning weapons.
Whoa! Did Pearl tell you the petal thing?
Yeah, I need to practice really hard so I can dance like a tree. I think.
Listen, Steven, all that practice stuff is no fun. Wherever I need to summon my weapon, it just happens. See? Didn't try at all.
Again? So I'm supposed to work really hard and not try at all at the same time?
Yes.
Or
you can link your mind with the energy of all existing matter, channeling the collective power of the universe through your gem, which results in... At least that's my way of doing it.
So what are all their weapons? I know Pearl has a spear or something.
Pearl has a spear.
Do we see their weapons in these scenes? I don't think we do.
Amethyst has a whip.
Oh, the whip. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then Garnet has her gloves or gauntlets, I guess you call them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It seems like she's always wearing those, but maybe not.
No, they only come on in battle.
She's got like big hands sometimes. She's got big hands. They definitely come out.
They all work with their character too. It's something too that you, in speaking of design, they really focused on what the placement of the gems means to them. Pearl has it on her head because she's very cerebral. Garnet has it on her hands because she's very hands-on. And meanwhile, Amethyst has it on her heart because she is very just instinctual.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steven having it on his gut is kind of a similar situation in that way too. Though that was the placement of Rose's gem as well, so it seems slightly inherited. I think this scene is really all about, like, there's no right way to do it. Like, there's not a Jedi secret way for him to learn how to do it.
To be yourself. That's what most of the show's about.
But what you need to know for the show, too, is, like, they've been with Steven for 11 years at this point, and he's never shown any signs of powers. But they are ready to train him when that finally happens. And it's important, too, that the show decides to start then. The show begins when Steven starts finally manifesting his powers. So it's not just about a powerless kid who lives with basically the Sailor Squad from Sailor Moon. Instead, it's about a kid joining them. And it's also, too, it's something they have in the pilot, which they don't really put in this. In the pilot, Lars makes fun of Steven for being in a girl group and having girly powers. And in the regular show, they kind of even drop that. But it's definitely showing that, like, it's Steven wants to be as powerful as the women around him. Their genders does not make him think they're less strong or that he's less manly for having a pink gem and wearing pink shirts and wearing pink flip-flops as well. Steven finally relaxes enough again, gets in his happy headspace with Cookie Cat, and summons his weapon for the first time.
Oh, wait, I sang the song first. He's a frozen treat, all new taste, interstellar war, and now available at Gherkins. Aw, it was funnier last time. Maybe I'm not a real crystal gem.
Don't be silly, Steven. Of course you are.
And you're fun to have around, even if your gem is useless. I mean, you're one of us, Steven. We're not the crystal gems without you.
Yeah. Even if I don't have powers, I've still got Cookie Cat. So good.
Steven, it's a shield.
Oh, what? I get a shield?
What's in these things?
The appearance of the shield is great. I love the specificity of Steven's TV VCR combo that he plays his video games on. It's so specific to its time, but like an actual 11-year-old today wouldn't know what the fuck that is. Mm-hmm.
He also watches Crying Breakfast Friends on his favorite cartoon.
God damn.
Every episode.
That is very anime, as Matthew said, especially like with the reprise of the theme song. It's very tinkly.
Yeah. And he has a full-on magical girl transformation during that too, which is perfect. Like that's exactly what they are going for in the show. And it's just so great that even from the start, it is a magical girl show where the main character is a pudgy 11-year-old boy who just loves life.
And I also want to point out one of the, we were talking about the crystal gems. They're immortal beings who are they're learning about their humanity. And they only started doing that like 15 years ago, because they were just immortal. They were this warrior race who have no emotions, don't care about anything.
They lived for thousands of years.
Yeah, they lived on Earth for, 5,000 years,
I
think?
Yeah, 5,000 years.
And it took until Rose, just basically had as a science experiment, she dated a bunch of guys that everyone hated, and then she meets Greg, and then they all start to realize okay, humans are pretty cool. In it would have been 2000 maybe at the earliest.
That's something that does depress me in the show sometimes, where they're just like, I'm kind of close to Greg's age if I really think about it. I'm Greg.
Greg, who is, you want to talk about Simpsons influence, it took until the fantasy sequence where he's all yellow, where I'm like, oh, he's Homer with long hair. He's exactly Homer's design.
He's got a Homer muzzle.
Yeah. And later on, it gets much more pronounced and rounder, much like Homer's. at this point, it's kind of thinner and more against his facial structure.
Though he does not have Homer does not have a farmer's tan usually. He did when they went to H2. Whoa.
That's true.
So then the centipedal returns to end this as a... in the classic Sentai show form of now the monster's back, how are we going to defeat him? Mm-hmm. I love Steven saving the day against the centipedal.
Why isn't it working?
Steven!
No! Oh, no, 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 no! Cookie Cat, he's the pet for your tummy. Cookie Cat, he's super duper yummy! Cookie Cat, he left his family behind! Cookie Cat! Now available nowhere. Yes! Gems, weapons.
Another very anime thing, a character has to say a very long speech while before they can pull up their ultimate move. In anime, it was so they could just reuse a scene. In this, it's just, they're going to make new animation every time.
Yeah, his finger burns with a burning mite or whatever that thing is.
Yeah, it's classic actually reminds me of the first episodes of My Hero Academia. Because the same way with no powers, Deku throws his book bag into the fray to save... to save the worst character in the show, Bakugo.
Oh, you're going to get some comments by saying that.
That sucks, man.
Love Bakugo.
And Steven...
I like the bird guy.
He's cool. But anyway, I mean, Grapehead's the worst character.
That's for sure.
Yeah. He's been discussed on this show.
But anyway, Steven...
Or will be, I guess. This is this week's.
Steven throws... Steven is giving up his childhood in a way. That's how I see it, as the destruction of Cookie Cat, eating all of his Cookie Cats. His childhood is going away. away, which is the overall theme of the show, too, is that Steven is learning the world's more complicated than he thought it was, like kids do. And to start the show with him destroying his childhood to save the crystal gems is a great first episode thing. And I also just love the hero pose of the three gems when they explode from behind the hand, too.
And it ends with vomiting.
Yes, it does.
Farewell, sweet cookie cats. I'll always remember the time we spent together. Shh. Hush now.
Are you crying?
Only a little!
Well, I guess your powers don't come from ice cream.
Of course they don't come from ice cream. Don't worry, Steven. I'm sure someday you'll figure out how to activate your gem.
Yes. In your own Steven-y way.
I'm okay, guys. I just... I think I ate too many cookie cats.
I had forgotten the first episode ended with vomiting.
It's nice that was it like an iris out where we don't see it? Yeah.
They iris out on the star almost every episode. Yeah. And it's really cool. I love the iris out on the
usually
star.
On someone's face. Mm-hmm. Stars are huge. Everyone's got a star on them, the gems. His eyes turn into stars.
And Steven's really feeling it. The eyes turn to stars.
Yeah, I love the star eyes. I don't know why it reminds me of Donkey Kong. Are there like star things in Donkey Kong? I don't know why.
On his tie, I think he has a star, doesn't he?
No, it's DK on a star.
Diddy Kong has a star on him somewhere.
It does. It reminds me of just Mario power-ups in general.
Yeah.
I don't think unintentional too. Rebecca Sugar she talked about some of her favorite video games on one of those podcasts with Steven that she would play on that type of TV that they gave Steven Universe near. And one of them was Yoshi's Island. It was a huge influence on design of the show, she said. I love Yoshi's Island so
baby
much.
Characters in this show look just like Baby Mario. They even have the little pacifier.
It's true.
Onion's brother, or maybe when we see Onion as a baby.
Onion's older brother in the past.
Yes.
Yeah, he's drawn that way.
Sour cream.
Voiced by Brian Posehn. Sour cream. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, and we didn't mention Kate Micucci.
Kate Micucci is Sadie.
Yeah.
She's so fucking good. I love...
Those Hulu bumpers that play before the episodes do, they just say, new episode's coming now. They're all running against a 2D plane, video game characters. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Mario or something like that.
It's from the intro.
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff like that. And speaking of beautiful... So after the first episode, we get to hear the end theme for the first time. It's the instrumental version of Love Like You, which when I saw it for the first time, it immediately clicked with me that this feels like Fly Me to the Moon from the end of Evangelion. Mm-hmm. Though it's many anime endings are kind of like this, but just the feel of a static shot with music going over it like that felt very Fly Me to the Moon to me, which is one of my favorite end themes of anything ever. I don't give a fuck what Frank Sinatra did. Fly Me to the Moon is that version of it.
Some of those remixes at the end are kind of bad.
It gets weird.
Yeah. Some are better than others.
Yeah,
I agree.
We don't need to let every voice actress sing this song. Maybe.
But the vocal version of Love Like You, sung by Rebecca Sugar, which they wouldn't play until a lot later in the show when it would be more emotionally impactful and in important episodes. It makes me well up with emotion every time I hear it. I love the song so much. It is very personal to me and in my relationship that the inscription on the inside of my ring is Love Like You. That is how much I love that song.
Wow.
And it's,
you need to show that to Rebecca Sugar next time you see her.
I won't look too crazy
when she's on the show.
Love Like You, it's my go-to song in the album, the Steven Universe album of songs from across the first four seasons.
It took so long for them to put out, and they finally did, and I'm like, okay, I'm glad they waited till all these songs are on it, because it came out pretty soon after the song we talked about earlier that Pearl sings.
At least it was comprehensive, too. It was fine. If they could have put out a CD with 20 tracks on it a while ago, but I liked that it went up to the most, the song that Yellow Diamond sings is such a great song, especially hearing Patti LuPone sing it.
Patti LuPone plays that character on the show.
The only person they need now is Lea Salonga. If they can get Lea Salonga, I will be so, so excited. But okay, then we go to the second episode, and we get to see some of the boardwalk characters, the Beach City townies, as they were.
Hey, Fryman! Give me the bits!
Steven, we're closed!
Oh, what?
Give him the bits! The bits! The bits!
The bits! The bits! The bits!
Okay, okay. Take it easy on the counter, will you?
Yes!
I can give you actual fries if you want.
Just the bits, please. Thanks. Ah, sunset. My favorite time of day. The sun goes down, and the second sun gets bigger and bigger in the sky.
Yeah, that big odd second sun. Oh, no. What is that doing here?
It's almost like a Philip Fry line setting up like a Futurama story.
It's true. I feel like he has seen two suns a number of times or thought something was a sun.
At least three suns.
Steven's love of bits will continue on in the show.
I was wondering.
And the fry bits, like, I won't say no to fry bits, but I'd rather have a complete fry than a fry bit. That makes Steven a little special there.
Were they charged for the fry bits, like fryer debris?
Seems like a freebie from the fryman.
Yeah, I don't think he pays for those bits.
And though just a shop that just sells fries, like, that is a very boardwalk thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, I like cups of fries on those things too. When you get them basically in just like a what would be a small Coke at a place full of French fries.
I'm surprised. Like, we live in the Bay Area and everything is too expensive. Why are there no like designer fry stands with like $30 cups of fries with truffle oil and things? Yeah,
you can go to the wharf and get a bucket of donuts. I've done that.
Wow,
that bucket's on my shelf in my kitchen.
Wow, I have lived here this long. I've only gone to the wharf once, and that's tourist visiting. I've never gone to the wharf myself.
It's got a great Bubba Gumps.
It does have an In-N-Out there, which is the closest In-N-Out around if you want to eat at one.
I didn't know that.
That one's like a mile away from my apartment, so if I do want to go to In-N-Out, I have to walk up the steepest hill in the world. So I earn my In-N-Out every time I go.
That's good. At least you work it off.
Yeah. I also had In-N-Out in Vegas recently. Like, I went to Vegas to live it up, and I went to In-N-Out, and it was the best In-N-Out I've had, though. It was really good.
I haven't had the Vegas In-N-Out, but my thing, when I'm in Vegas, like, there's a Shake Shack right there on the Strip, so I pick Shake Shack over In-N-Out.
Where does Johnny Rockets stand in this hierarchy?
I do like a Johnny Rockets. I don't
I ate
love
there
it
when I ate meat.
Yeah, I don't love it. It's fine. It's there. It's good if you want to get a shake. But I do like Shake Shack. But I'm from the East Coast and we have Shake Shack. We don't have In-N-Out on the East Coast, so I am enjoying my In-N-Out as a West Coast as a recent West Coast transplant.
Yeah, In-N-Out's good. It's good.
This has been an episode of the Doughboys.
Hey, if any show is going to make us talk about this stuff, it's going to be Steven Universe.
That's true. It's a very foodie show. Well, so the first episode sets up the Crystal Gems. You get to meet his three moms. And this episode, though, you get to find out he has a dad, too. And a key to the show is his parents, like, that Steven is the son of a musician and a warrior. Mm-hmm. And his mom is a warrior and his dad is a musician. And I got to say, when we first hear about Greg, he does sound like a mega loser.
The only thing powerful enough to destroy it is a light cannon that belonged to Rose Quartz.
My mom?
If Rose were here, this would be so easy.
I know, but she's not. And the cannon is missing. We'll have to find another solution.
If it belonged to my mom, I bet my dad knows where it is. He can help us save the day. Huh? Eh?
Greg is nice, Stephen. But I doubt Rose would entrust someone like him with such a powerful weapon.
Your dad is kind of a mess, Stephen.
Amethyst.
I'm just saying. Even if she did leave it with him, he probably broke it, or lost it, or dropped it in the ocean by now.
True.
No way! I'm sure he's just keeping it somewhere safe. I'll go ask him.
We can handle this, Steven.
His dad is kind of a towny dirtbag, but I like that they have a good relationship, at least from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, Greg's not a bad guy at all. There is a definite softening and recalibration of Greg in the second season, or the second half of season one. After episode 27, the Dear Old Dad episode, mm-hmm. where he moves in with them, is a real, like, reaction to maybe him coming off as too much of a dirtbag in these episodes.
It's really complicated because Greg at first can seem like kind of a deadbeat dad, but you realize that he is so very hurt and sad that he can't raise Steven. Like, he just can't. Those gems have to, and they won't let him do it. He does as much as he can, but he's basically a weekend dad. Like, he sees his dad as much as he can. He doesn't live very far away. He lives in his van at the car wash that he works at.
But Steven moved in with them in the temple, like, so he lives with them by Greg's choice. I guess it'll be revealed later, but you hear it even in his lines later about, like, oh, this is magic stuff. The gems told me to leave that to them. Like,
I can't make those decisions. That will it'll be bad, I promise.
And you also, in that scene, they pack in so many things. One, you get to know what Pearl thinks of Greg. Particularly a lot there.
All the gems have a very complicated relationship with Greg, and it's, you learn a lot about it later on.
And two, you get to hear the Amethyst and Pearl's exchange of, like, if Rose was here, it'd be so easy.
Yeah.
That they're still in mourning, clearly, and that Pearl's just like, yeah, I know. Mm. All right, I miss her more than you.
Which is, like, the saddest part of the show when you realize... when everyone looks at Steven, the protagonist, the person they love the most, the person that brings everyone in this town together, they cannot help but think about the person that they lost to make him. So if that is the most pressure a human being can possibly have, is that, like, the greatest warrior who saved our planet for thousands of years gave up her corporeal form, which is dropped so casually in this episode because it's just a normal thing everyone knows, to create Steven.
And it's just, it's basically saying, like, well, Jesus Christ used to exist, and then they became you, and you're nice.
Yeah, cool. You're no Jesus.
And also, that Pearl line, that will come up in multiple episodes where she's just like, well, if I don't know this about Rose, nobody else would. Mm-hmm. I knew Rose better than anybody.
Pearl was deeply in love with Rose. She's a Pearl, which we learn is the servant class of their world and their race.
Gems,
So the Pearls are created to serve someone. They're basically a butler that is also like a warrior. And she was taught by Rose to be her own person. Mm-hmm. To she doesn't belong to anyone. In fact, when
Bismuth comes back, does this Pearl belong to? No one.
Like, so that moment's so good.
Yeah, though you can see that Pearl kind of... she technically didn't serve anyone anymore, but she replaced her boss with Rose.
Yeah, she saw as that new figure. Mm-hmm. And then so she kind of sees Greg as Rose chose Greg over her. She could have been with Rose, and they would have been happy, and Rose would still be here. But she chose this fat, weird man, this balding man, who has a van and a band. And, you know, she chose this unremarkable man over me, which is a thing that even if she had chosen, you know, Steve Jobs or George Washington or whoever, you're going to think that way. That's how you feel about someone who chose someone over you.
Sometimes I think Pearl has a little biphobia in her, too. Just like, oh, you went with this guy.
Ugh. You betrayed us.
Some man. Yeah. But then we get to meet Greg, and Greg's a fun guy. Yeah.
Steven? I almost waffled your face. What are you doing up so late?
What do you mean? The sun just went down an hour ago.
Oh. It was a slow day at the car wash. Anyway, what's up? Just needed to see your old man? Pal around, learn some lessons about life?
No! I need the light cannon that belonged to Mom to blow up that eyeball.
Eyeball?
That!
Wait, is that a magical thing? The gems told me not to get involved with magic stuff. It could be dangerous or interfere with what's left of my hair.
But they need Mom's cannon. You've got to know where it is. Like a cave dungeon, or a cloud fortress, or in a clam at the bottom of the ocean.
Well, I don't know about all that, but I have an idea where it might be.
It's so cute that Steven dreams up video gamey situations for where this is, and instead it's in a used store.
A very mundane place.
Yeah, that's a real theme of Steven Universe, of the fantasy mixing with the mundane. I'm just like, well, you do have these crystal light warriors around them, but also you're on a boardwalk in New Jersey, and maybe some stuff's just in your dad's collection of junk. And then he lives in a van and has a flip-flop of tan lines.
I like all the stuff he finds in the used store there.
It's all beautiful, especially the t-shirt cannon gun.
The t-shirt cannon that's an ad for t-shirt cannon. Which is clearly a pyramid scheme he got tricked into.
Yeah.
One of many.
You get
probably
a sense of what he's done in the past.
His golf clubs, because he envisions himself as a man who would golf.
He bought a bongo. He's like, maybe I'll play the bongo.
That's a very, like, depressing human quality where you buy something for yourself. Like, I'm that kind of person, then you never touch it.
If I buy this, then I'll be this person and happy. I better put it in the corner.
Ask the banjo on my wall what that's like to never be taken off the wall.
But Steven's just impressed by all of this stuff. He doesn't see a loser. He doesn't see a failure. He just sees, what a fun guy my dad is. He has all this cool stuff. What a nice guy. And then we get a very brief version of how Greg and Rose met.
Hey, there's a bunch of copies of your old CD.
Oh, man. I couldn't give those things away. You know, before I ran the car wash, when I was a one-man band, I traveled the whole country.
I know, Dad.
When I came to play a concert here in Beach City, no one showed up except...
an alligator!
No, it was your mother.
I know.
And we were always together after that. Until she gave up her physical form to bring you into the world. I don't know what a magic lady like her ever saw in a plain old dope like me.
Dad? I broke a photo!
It's okay, buddy. If every pork chop were perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs.
Huh? The light cannon!
Oh, boy. That thing's giving me the willies.
Dad, I found it!
Really?
I mean, he has to tell Steven stuff that Steven already knows, but I guess it helps that it's prompted by Steven finding items and, like, asking about them. So it's not as clumsy as it could be.
I like that idea of, like, your dad telling you how he met your mom a million times. Like, it works. It doesn't sound as pilot-y. It's not the same as, like, hey, your dad didn't die in a car accident in the rain 10 years ago to save your life so he could, you know. Why just ruin every dinner by telling me this story?
Why must you always? Yeah, I had forgotten that. I thought it was the first time we saw Rose's face was on the videotape in about a dozen or so episodes, but it's right there on the photograph. Yeah. You get to see her right there.
Because they have a big painting of her in the house, and it's always cut off at the neck.
At first, it seems like you're like, well, are you just going to hide her face forever, and it'll be some big reveal? And they almost verge on that, but they're like, no, we're going to show her face. And Rose is only seen in flashbacks, but she's a major character on the show.
The story he just told is a whole episode later. Yeah, a wonderful episode.
It's great. It brings in his writing partner and comedy partner, John Worster, to play his old manager too. It's really great. And that
Billy Boy Roy.
Yeah. And that that is a Tom Sharplingism if there ever was one there. So I'm so glad they got that in there. And yeah, you get to see though from that photograph, that is late in Rose's life. Like in most of the flashbacks we see with Rose, Greg doesn't look like him, his current self. He's younger.
He's got more hair.
He's got much more hair. Yeah. But you get to see his love of hot dogs from the beginning in the photo.
Even in this first, second episode, rather, you see in the photo with Rose, he's bald, but on the CD cover, he's got a huge head of hair.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. The wonderful Mr. Universe. And I love his van design, too. It's so perfect. It's just like this giant space van. And he feels no shame being a van guy or being like, some people, it would make him a lot sadder of a character who's just like, I know I'm a loser. I know I've worked at a car wash for 20 years and live in a van. That is kind of sad, isn't it?
He chooses his life.
Yeah, he embraced the van lifestyle.
But another important aspect of Greg in this episode is that he is a lapsed musician. Like, he stopped playing music at a certain point in his life. And Steven loves that he played music, but he's kind of embarrassed. He's like, oh, that old thing, or just the way he blushes. And meanwhile, Steven is just like, yeah, I love your song. This is great. And
I love the bouncing animation.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I saw you post a GIF of that at some point recently.
Yeah, it's a great way to show like excitement. Like, yeah, I love it. Let's let this song into our heart.
If every pork chop were perfect,
we wouldn't have hot dogs.
That thing's getting huge. It's freaking me out.
Can't the van go any faster?
This is faster.
Don't worry. Come on, let's put on your CD.
Really? Come on, you've heard it.
You come on.
I know I'm not that tall. I know I'm not that smart. But let me drive my van into your heart. Let me drive my van into your heart. I know I'm not that rich. I'm trying to get my start.
Very sweet. Is that on the full soundtrack? The full song?
Yes, yeah, the full song, not changed up the sound levels or anything. It's the full song sung by Tom Sharpling.
And his band were the Gems. Amethyst was the drummer, and Pearl wasn't really involved because she hates him.
She hates him, but Garnett was on the guitar.
Interesting. I like how it starts with like his blazing guitar riff, but then it's like he's basically talk singing like Cake, very low key.
Yes, yeah. He sings a bit more in later episodes, but though Tom Sharpling, it's weird how many times he has to sing on the show, and he is not a professional singer unlike say Estelle or Dee Dee, but he gives it his all when it's time to sing. But so they arrive, death is coming at him, and I do love Amethyst as a comic book fan. Amethyst and Garnet doing the fastball special is always cool. and just the running joke of like thunk ball.
That's a great sound, like the hollow thunk of her hitting that thing so from beautiful. Far away.
They've got the cannon there. I love love the shock. She's like, wait, he did have it? Like, they're all getting to see they were wrong about Greg, mm-hmm. that he's not a complete fuck up. And also, Pearl hates kind of seeing that he did have something she didn't know about with Pearl, with Rose. It, yeah. That shit drives her crazy.
So I have a question. Are these characters in this universe used to monsters attacking them from other places? Or is this like Evangelion where it's like, oh, I guess there are monsters now that show up and fight us?
No, they face those monsters semi-regularly. In the first episode, you see Garnet put the thing that's left over in a bubble and it teleports away.
Yeah.
You see the room where they've put all those bubbles that they teleport to. There's a lot in there. So.
Because, yeah, Greg is a very low-key character and he has a very low-key reaction, but I was also reading it as like, well, somebody's going to take care of this, but it's still creeping me out.
I think the town doesn't know as much about it. They definitely do later as they learn through Steven, but there are conversations about like, you know, because Ronaldo also thinks that the gems aren't real and that Steven's making them up. So like, there's definitely some either denial or ignorance about it.
They don't want to know on a certain level, too. Yeah. But also that they always lived so separately until...
There's the weird ladies who live in a cave on the beach.
Yeah, we're not going to talk to them. And then Steven is the one who kind of starts bringing them into their lives. Mm-hmm. But so they set up the light cannon. And when I watch this again, I'm like, oh, what Steven is talking about is dad when he's talking about the cannon here.
Unlock! Activate! Go! Please! Everyone's counting on you! You can't just be useless! I know you can help!
It's okay, Steven. We'll figure out something else. Something even better.
Right. If every pork chop were perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs.
The design on that cannon, the way it is petals unfolding on a rose is beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And I love the color design of that scene where they're all just being lit by this bright pink glow and all the colors are changing around them. It's really, really pretty.
And then it fires a dancing rose quartz that like has a bunch of things spiraling around it, which is also a very Utena anime thing.
Great animation. I think it starts as a flower, then turns into her.
Yeah.
And it's like very, very
and
well
reaching
done.
Reaching out to. Yeah. And yeah, it's the... It's definitely a revolutionary girl, but also a lot of anime do the laser transforms into a thematic thing. It's not just a laser.
It can't just be a laser.
No, it's got to tell a story. It's got to look like something.
Turn to a dragon.
It's probably a Sailor Moon thing as well.
Yeah, and it's just a beautiful shot of the four of them holding the cannon up together, and it shows you that Steven is getting to be more a part of the gems as the episodes go on. But I think he is really talking about his dad. He says, like, you can't just be useless. Everyone's believing in you. Mm-hmm. Like, he's saying that, like, please, I told him you're not a loser. Like, don't let me down.
Don't make me look dumb.
They blow up the red eye. The laser works. It's great. And everybody's pretty impressed. He has saved most of Beach City.
Steven, you just saved most of Beach City.
Sorry about that!
What?
How did you get it to work?
I just said that thing that Dad always says.
That thing about pork rinds?
Hot dogs.
Rose. My fan!
It's okay, Dad. If every pork chop were perfect,
I love it there!
The end.
Such a sweet little ending there too. Then that you get to see Greg. Greg is chill about a lot of things, but if his home is about to be washed, it's like, I live in there.
That van is destroyed. By the way, it was like almost totally submerged.
That van has seen worse days.
Though. Yeah, I guess so. He's had it a long time.
But I also just love you get to see the Greg wiping the tear out of his eye. That he being reminded of Rose still, it's a raw new nerve for him. Yeah. More than a decade later, he's just like, he cries at the idea of Rose even. And it's a touching ending that both shows you where Greg is at, that he can be part of the team, that Steven is moving up in the world too, and in the team's estimation, and it really lets you understand what Rose meant to them. At least you get a little bit of it.
Another nice dirtbag touch I noticed is how they towed the rocket with a chain of extension cords tied together.
Yeah,
that was really great.
On like a radio flyer wagon
with the wheels broken.
That is perfect. In another show, they would have just drawn rope, and you'd be like, "Yeah, it's a rope. It's a rope." But
he wouldn't have anything useful in his in his use storage.
So instead, he has like he just ties together multiple extension cables and draws. That is such a great specific. I do love that too. And we do get to see Mr. Smiley in background. That's the man voiced by Sinbad. Mm-hmm. We don't get to see Mayor Dewey just yet.
He runs the arcade.
Yes,
Mr. Smiley.
Yeah. Mr. Smiley does. Mayor Dewey, Bob, not only is voiced by Joel Hodgson, but is drawn to be Joel Hodgson.
He looks just like him.
That's
he's,
great.
Yeah, he's got a giant...
I have to look that up now.
He's got like a giant sculpture of his head on his own van that he drives around.
Mayor
and
Dewey.
Vote for Mayor Dewey. Yeah.
Mayor, it's beautiful.
This show's so fucking fantastic.
Yeah, I love this show so much. So those are the first two episodes of Steven Universe. It's... you know, they obviously aren't deep into the lore. The show is honestly, I would tell everybody to start from the beginning, because if you were to jump in even at episode 24, you'd be like, this makes no sense. What is this thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation on the internet about like how to watch it. Here's the viewing order, and it's like, just watch it how it came out. It's great. The episodes are only 11 minutes.
These episodes aren't bad. Like, yeah. It's not like, oh, there were bad episodes, and then you get into... I would say with Adventure, I think you can start from the beginning with Adventure Time, but if you really wanted to get like... You could skip 20 episodes and just get in there. But with Steven Universe, I would say start from the beginning, and you'll have a good time.
Yeah. You learn a lot.
We are about to take a small vacation from podcasting. Our podcasts aren't going anywhere, but we're working like weeks and months in advance because Henry's going on his honeymoon. But now with that time in front of me, I feel obligated to catch up on this and other cartoons too, especially this. Mm. Like seeing it again, like I watched 5 episodes of this like a year ago and I was like, okay, got to watch more. And then life is happening and I completely forgot about that. But now I'm back and I'm reinvigorated.
Have
I want to watch more.
Gravity Falls?
No, one episode. I saw. I was like going through Hulu, like watching the first episode of everything I missed.
That should be on your list. Yeah, it's a great show.
Gravity Falls is a great show, and it's about half as long as Steven. It had a finite end, much sooner than Steven will, I believe, have a finite end when the time comes. But that time, who knows when that will be? Honestly, like it could go for another 100 episodes. I believe Sugar has said she knows where the ending is, but she won't even give a hint at like how close we are to it. Or not.
It's good to know she has a definitive end in mind, and like all other shows just sort of go on until they're canceled, and then they have to like, oh shit, scramble.
Well, there was a time where they thought the 26th episode of the show would be the last one. When they started production on it, they thought, oh, this is the last episode, right?
And it feels that way too.
Yeah. It was them going like, well, if this is the last one, let's get big. Let's have a big thing happen.
That's with the hand.
That's Jailbreak 51 and 52. I mean the Lapis Lazuli ones are supposed to be the finale, which is quite big. She's stealing all the water on Earth.
Yeah.
Like, I guess we mentioned this earlier, but they release these through what are called Steven Bombs, I guess. Mm-hmm. They don't normally air like, okay, here's the season in order. They're like, here's 5 episodes, and they're all related or something, right?
Yeah, so at the beginning, it was broadcast more regularly of just like, well, here it's for this month, there's just a new episode every week, and then we go into reruns, but a few years into it, they decided they'd release them as Steven Bombs because they usually often tell stories that are like 6 to 10 episode arcs. Mm-hmm. And so you watch them all together and it's pretty definitive beginning and ending and it comes to a resolution. But that also means like episode 3 in a Steven Bomb really doesn't have resolution and leaves you hanging. And I wonder if from a programming way, they're just like, we can't leave kids hanging for like a month with this. We got to show them the next week's episode right now.
I think it's very smart in addressing now. See, we're all old and we're used to be like, I like the show on Tuesday. Now I'll wait till next Tuesday for the next episode. Kids now are be like, I like this series and here's all 10 episodes on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. They're not conditioned.
Yeah. But, and people complain about that, but that's how Cartoon Network's been doing it for a really long time. Like back in the cartoon days, that's how we watched Dexter's Lab too. But they didn't call it; wasn't transparent.
Yes.
It just happened when it happened.
The information wasn't out there for us.
I beg them to make a non-tablet app. I want that so bad.
Yeah, unfortunately, I know Ian Jones Quarty said this about OKKO that the app views mean more than views in other places.
Yeah.
Even buying it on iTunes. Well, because Cartoon Network, this is my belief, Cartoon Network loves their app. They want every kid to have the app. So if you get a view on the app, maybe it's worth 5 views on iTunes or 5 views on TV.
And they get way more ad money off of that than anything else.
And I've had to sit through a lot of McDonald's commercials to watch OKKO on the app.
But now you know about all the Happy Meal toys you can't buy in the city.
I'm upset that they've gotten so healthy in Happy Meals. It's like, it's still garbage. Like, just if you put apple slices in it.
You chose the worst fruit. The least healthy fruit.
The cheapest fruit.
Also that.
But anyway, yeah, that is Steven Universe, the first pair of episodes. I would tell everybody to stick with the show. If you've never watched it before, give it a try. I love this show so very much. And April 7th is when the next Steven Bomb is. We've been waiting a long time since the last one, and now finally a new Steven Bomb is coming, which promises for some big answers in this. Like, they're the first ad I saw for it was like, answers are coming. I was like, wow, because they've been teasing a couple secrets, Bob, for a really long time, and now they're teasing the answers to that.
It's awesome. Thank you so much for listening, folks. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, and of course you probably know this already, but if not, I'll tell you anyways. My other podcast is Retronauts every Monday, occasionally Friday, at retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. It's a classic gaming podcast. It's been going on for almost 12 years. We've done a ton of topics, probably like 500 episodes at this point. But if you want to get into the show, I say find a topic you like and download the corresponding episode, and I think you will like it. All of this that we do here is brought to you by our amazing patrons at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, and this show was unlocked through those donations. And if you donate $5 at the $5 level, you get both Talking Simpsons and this show a week ahead of time and ad-free, and you get also dozens and dozens and dozens of podcasts that we've done, and dozens more we'll do in the future. And Henry will tell us about some of those.
There's tons of cool interviews on there, not just with folks who worked on The Simpsons, but as well with, we have a really cool one with Ian Jones-Quartey, the co-executive producer on Steven Universe and creator of OKKO. We actually didn't ask him any Steven Universe questions. We stuck to OKKO, but it was a really cool interview. He's a great guy, and you can listen to that and tons of other interviews with folks who worked on The Simpsons. Also, you could listen to our entire deconstruction of the show, The Critic, in Talking Critic, exclusively there on Patreon. And if you love Futurama, Talking Futurama has just begun, and we're going to be going through the entire first season exclusively at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. You can get access to that at just $5 a month, and all in the same Patreon RSS feed, you will get access to every podcast we do, and that includes this one. So thanks again to all of our wonderful patrons that make this possible.
Hey, I'm on some of that stuff you guys just talked about.
Matthew's been a huge help on all of our new shows we started.
I love you guys and your shows, and I love talking to you about old cartoons. And if you like listening to me talk about old cartoons, check out my YouTube show, Cartoons 101, at youtube.com/cartoons101, which also has its own Patreon. And hey, guess the hell what? If you go to that Patreon and go to the $5 level, you can listen to a brand new podcast with you guys on it as well a little bit, and a bunch of other awesome internet anime nerd friends of mine.
I like it.
It's called Conversation Genesis Evangelion, and it's us going through Neon Genesis Evangelion. Like I said, a bunch of my cool internet anime friends are coming. I don't even want to name names just in case, but I cannot believe some of the people who are going to be on the show. So I'm very excited. I'll say one, Alex Fraioli, because fuck that guy. Who cares? Alex, you're worthless to me, and if you're not on it, I don't care. I love you, Alex.
I'll be at his bar in a few months in Japan.
I'm so jealous.
Rewatching Evangelion while also watching these episodes made me see more comparisons and contrasting things with it in this too. It's really,
me too.
They're both beautiful shows. Yeah.
And if you're listening to this in March, then that Patreon is about to have a big relaunch. So if you sign up for patreon.com/cartoons101, you will not be charged until April 1st when the big relaunch happens, when you get the first episode of Conversation Genesis Evangelion, when you get the first new Cartoons 101, and check out all the other, there's a bunch of cool rewards on there. Like, I'll draw you pictures, I'll record promos for a thing that you have and put it in a Cartoons 101 if you go to that level. And all of my donation tiers are named after the original members of the Bare Naked Ladies. So if you have a favorite member of the Bare Naked Ladies, pick one of them.
Johnny Glasses.
Old bowling shirt.
That's all of them.
And in your YouTube channel, Cartoon 101 is great. I love the videos on there. Especially the Goofy movie one is one of my favorites.
Recently endorsed by Movies with Mikey from FilmJoy.
Nice.
Yeah, who is like one of my favorite YouTubers, and he retweeted it and said it was good.
I'm glad the narrative is changing on the Goofy movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it's the best Disney film of the 90s. I'll say that. I'll fight someone to the death.
Big talk.
We need a conversation about that next, but stay tuned for next week, folks. We'll see you then with some Ren and Stimpy. Later.
If I could begin to be half of what you think of me, I could do about anything. I could even learn how to love. When I see the way you act, wondering when I'm coming back, I could do about anything. I could even learn how to love like you. Like you.
right by you. I would do about anything. I would even learn how to love. When I see the way you look, shaken by how long it took, I could do about anything. I could even learn how to love.